Marianne Tierney, Sarah realized, had become the plaything of fate. 4 months ago, there had been no Protection of Life Act. 2 weeks ago, given the stage of this pregnancy, another doctor might have questioned fetal viability. Now Marianne was captive to cross-currents she neither controlled nor understood, and Sarah shrank from adding to them. But Marianne had come here, however late, and was entitled to know what chance for her remained. "There's one thing left," Sarah told her. "It's not clear that this law is valid." The remark seemed slow to register. Sarah waited until Marianne gazed up again, looking so young that Sarah, though pained for her, felt it as a burden. "Under Roe v. Wade," she began, "women have the constitutional right to an abortion. But after the fetus is viable, which your own doctor says it is, Congress can ban abortion unless it's necessary to protect the mother's life or health." No one knows exactly what that means, and no court has decided yet whether the Protection of Life Act violates a minor's right to decide, with a doctor's advice, what a substantial medical risk means to her. Sarah paused, reluctant, then told her the rest. "If the court finds it unconstitutional, there's no law in California to stop you from deciding for yourself." Fingers tented. Marianne stared at the floor as though trying to absorb this. "It's only fair to tell you," Sarah ventured, "just how hard that would be." Marianne swallowed. "You mean my parents?" "You may have to face them, in and out of court. At this point, there's no way to conceal an abortion." Sarah's voice was firm. "That's just the beginning. Your lawyer would file the case under a pseudonym to try and protect your privacy. But if word gets out, the media will be all over it. The same people you saw outside would be picketing the courthouse. The pro-choice activists might try to use you as their poster girl. Because you'd be attacking an act of Congress, the Justice Department will be obligated to oppose you. And because most people believe without much thought that parental consent is good and late-term abortion is inhumane, the political pressure surrounding a challenge to the law could be enormous." Tears sprang to the girl's eyes again. Sarah forced herself to continue. "Most of all, I worry about you. The weeks you'd spend fighting this law would feel too long and too short. Too short because there's not that much time until you have the baby. Too long because every day could tear your family apart." Arms folded, Marianne began rocking back and forth, as though her pain were physical. Without much hope, Sarah ventured. "You only need one parent. Is there any way to change your mother's mind?" Marianne shook her head. "You don't understand. It would tear them apart, too." Her voice trailed off. "Would your doctor help?" Sarah asked.
"No."
The words were muffled.
"He's my parents' friend. They all believe abortion is a sin. You're the only one who can help me."
The simple anguish in those words broke through the last of Sarah's defenses. "My mother would have held you," she thought. "Then she'd have found a way." "It isn't fair," Sarah said. "I know that." Turning away, the girl shuddered, inconsolable.
"I guess court's the only hope."
Sarah drew a breath. "It would be a big case, Marianne. I'm just an associate. I can't take any case, let alone for free, without asking the partner's permission." The girl looked up at her.
"Then ask them. Please."
Abruptly, Sarah realized how many of her cautions for Marianne also applied to herself, and as quickly felt a defiant surge of the ego and independence, which, in a conservative and hierarchical law firm, she often struggled to suppress. "At least," Sarah temporized, "I can make some calls, maybe find someone else." The girl's face closed as if at a betrayal.
"Whatever."
She was on the edge, Sarah told herself, and she was 15. By definition, even before this trauma, unstable, uncertain, untrustworthy, and self-involved, as Sarah remembered all too well. "Marianne," she said succinctly, "we're talking about a lawsuit which could end up in the United States Supreme Court. Whatever doesn't get it." Chastened, the girl touched her eyes.
"I'm sorry."
Now Sarah, too, felt helpless. At length, she said, "Tell me how I can reach you." Despairingly, the girl shook her head.
"You can't. After I got pregnant, my mother took the phone out of my room."
God, Sarah thought. Slowly, she absorbed the full weight of this girl's youth and isolation, and the responsibility this could impose on Sarah. I'm not saying I'll be your lawyer, but you can call me tomorrow, all right? From school. Marianne faced her, tears welling again as much, Sarah guessed, from exhaustion as from hope. Sarah wondered what would happen if she turned this girl away.